The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio, brought to you in part by Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Hendler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to the show. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. Mark, what do you got today in recovery news?
So, Gary, tomorrow marks marijuana culture's high holiday called 420. Basically, college students gather at 420 to smoke pot. Everybody knows about 420, pretty much.
Why is it called 420?
Well, this is the part I was doing some research on. You know, it's a lot of people don't know the exact nature of it. I mean, I used to hear it had to do with Hitler. It had to do with the police and all this stuff. Some people say it has to do with the song Everybody Must Get Stoned by Bob Dylan. But the most prevalent theory out there is that the term comes from a group of five friends that were nicknamed the Waldos, and they were located in San Rafael, California in the 1960s. Basically, one of the friends' brothers had a marijuana patch in the woods near Point Reyes, California. He was afraid to get busted, this kid. And so he told them if they found the marijuana patch, they could have all the pot. And the friends would meet every day at the Louis Pasteur statue at 4:20 in the afternoon. And they would also whisper to each other, Louis 4:20. They never found the pot patch.
Okay, but that's a good one, Mark.
You don't believe it, do you?
No, of course not. Yeah. But, you know, if you said it, I believe it. Okay?
Yes. I mean, it's actually, you know, documented in multiple areas. The kids are still alive. They're in their 60s now.
That's interesting.
And that's what they think it comes from.
Okay.
You know?
What else you got?
Secondly, a new study came out of the Clinical and Experimental Research.
Yeah.
It basically studied 79 college sophomores and was looking into the incidences of blackouts. On average, each kid drank four or more drinks at the weekends. But it was very interesting to me because they were looking at what really causes a blackout. And they found that in total, the students had 147 blackouts over 486 days of drinking. And what they found is that blackouts occurred on days when many factors happened. When alcohol consumption was faster, when there was a higher amount of alcohol consumed, and where alcohol was consumed for a more prolonged period. They also found that female students had 80% of blackouts, males had 70%. The students experienced a blackout 2-point incidence over the study period. And basically what they're saying is they're telling students to avoid drinking games because drinking games are thought to really lead to blackouts.
Do you ever have a blackout?
I don't know.
Or you were blacked out and you didn't know it.
I definitely had some memory lapses of when I was drunk.
Oh, Mark.
You know?
I know that.
But, you know, and I still do, Gary.
No. Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. I don't think I had a blackout ever.
Really?
No.
Yeah. I run into it as a therapist. I run into a lot of people. And, you know, unfortunately, it's scary stuff because people do stuff in blackouts they regret.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
Okay. Do you think as parents we have any responsibility connected with our kids' addiction? And do we have any responsibility with getting them clean? When we come back, we're going to find out some answers, and we'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. the Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Hey, man, this is Ricky Bird, former member of Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, an inductee to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as of 2015, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio, and so do my friends here, right?
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, welcome back, and you can also enjoy us, you can enjoy this show on these radio stations, WWDB in Philadelphia, 97.5 FM, HD2 in Philadelphia, WGAC in Augusta, Georgia, and WNBR in Tampa, Florida. And Mark, you know who just walked in the studio? Linda E. is with us today.
Yes, she is. I was very happy to see her.
And let's just tell the audience who Linda E. is. Linda is, first of all, a longtime friend of mine. And she comes to the show a lot and gives us a lot of support. So we're glad to have you today, Linda.
Hi, hello, everybody. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. So, guys, I thought today's topic, and we can talk about anything after that or during it, what responsibility do we have as parents concerning our kids' addiction? And what are our responsibilities? Do we have any to get them clean, sober? They get sober, that's great. If they don't, are we to blame? And the third thing is, I know it's a lot of stuff here, should we be responsible as parents if our children who are in addiction get in trouble with the legal system? So that's what I want to throw out to you. And in a little while, I'll bring up a case that we can talk about. But, you know, what do you think, Mark? So let me just – Linda and I have kids, older kids. We've both had issues with kids. Mark's son is hopefully mm-hmm. won't have issues. He's mm-hmm. a young kid now. But it's a scary thing. And I'd like to get some input from the audience at 1-888-728-9941 and let the three of us know what's going on.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a tough question here because a lot of people have a lot of shame and guilt and things that yeah. happen to their kids. And, you know, I got to tell you, the most prevalent, you know, cause of this thing is the genetic predisposition. However, another very prevalent cause is childhood trauma. And so there's sort of a mixture of the two that you see the most. And I guess when you talk about causation, it's like how much trauma did a kid go through and could have the parents prevented some of that trauma? Does that make sense?
And again, I hope you never have to go through this with your kid.
Yeah.
It is traumatic, not only for the kid, but the whole family. And everybody knows that listening. The whole family is affected by the addiction.
Yeah, it's I always work with families and everything. And you know, I know you guys have family members, and I have cousins and things like that, but not kids. And it's a really tough area because, you know, in recovery, it's like the family has to recover too and let go of some of this. It could be guilt and shame and things like that.
But like, Linda, do you think if your kid hurt somebody severely or did something, do you think you should be charged?
Well, I was going to talk about the genetic disposition. We have, you know, you're giving your child whatever diseases you came with. So is it our fault that they inherited the disease? Is it our fault that they picked up? There are people in my birth family who've never picked up, who never abused alcohol. So we don't know if they are or they're not. But if your kid does and doesn't tell you, if they have a trauma they can't handle, and as Mark said, it's very important with kids or teenagers to ask what started their drinking. With adults, what starts and keeps it up is because you're already addicted and you keep going over and over. But with a child, it's important to address their trauma and find out what started it. How can we unravel it? How can they feel good without having a substance?
Should you be arrested if your kid shoots somebody?
For genetics? No, a shooting is different. We're not talking about
shooting. I'm talking about any kind of crime.
That's different. Did I give him the gun?
Well, I'm just asking you.
If I gave him the gun, is it my gun?
So 2 years ago in Michigan, James and Jennifer Crumley's son shot and killed four people. Mm. He was a juvenile. The parents bought him a gun, and they were sentenced last week to 10 to 15 years each in prison. The son got life without parole. Both parents got 10 to 15 years. So this family, the nucleus of it. Now they're the three of them are in separate prisons, basically forever. So I guess the question is, should the parents be charged?
I don't believe so. I think that's actually insane. They got 10 to 15 years.
Each parent, yeah.
And they did not shoot the gun.
Correct.
I mean, that's just that. To me, it sounds insane.
It does to me, too.
How old was the young man?
He was juvenile, 15 or something.
Oh, like. My, that makes it even worse, yeah. Because, you know, kids do dumb stuff. And, you know, it was a huge, I could see some kind of, like, involuntary manslaughter and, you know, maybe a year or something
like that.
This
is the first time in the history of the United States that parents were charged and sentenced for crimes having to do with their children.
It's a slippery slope right there, don't you think, Linda?
It really is. It's scary. I mean, they gave him the gun. Did they know what he was going to do? Did they know his intent?
Well,
did they know
question.
He was unstable?
Yeah. I mean, that's what
is it their responsibility because he was a minor?
The prosecution brought that up, you know.
I wonder.
They bought him a gun. They took him to the shooting range. Apparently, obviously, maybe he had he's mentally ill.
Yeah.
And so that's why the parents were charged. First time ever.
Yeah, it's just to me it sounds, and we'd love to hear from the audience on this, you know, at 888-728-9941. But it just sounds outlandish to me that parents could be facing 10 to 15 years.
I'm not facing. They
got sentenced to 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, parents, they probably had absolutely no idea. And I think, Linda, you brought up a good point. If they knew or if they, you know, things like that. But the parents had, it was a dumb decision, of course.
Of course.
But,
also in the courtroom, the parents had no remorse.
Oh.
Oh.
That's
Ooh.
Not good with a judge. You know?
Yeah.
Blaming
yeah.
everything on everybody else. It's really a tragic story. But, Linda, I don't know about you, but I remember when my family member was out there. I was always nervous. You know, the little thing, you drink, you get drunk, and you kill somebody in a car, you're done. And the difference between killing somebody in a car sober and killing somebody in a car high is a whole different story.
Completely
one's an accident
different.
And one's a serious criminal charge. So, well, yeah, this case is pretty scary, you know that?
It is. And, you know, I was thinking of cases where, you know, the parents have a graduation party and they know the kids are drinking there. Then one of them goes on the road and kills somebody, which, you know, obviously you could get charged for that, too, which, I mean, I kind of agree with in some ways.
But, you know, I think we've all been through this with our kids. You don't want to say no. OK, sometimes it's hard to say no. And sometimes you have to say no, but you don't. And just like you said, oh, my friends want to come over. And, you know, the excuses, the rationale is, oh, let them drink in our house so we know where they are. That's nonsense.
When I was up at the prison a few months ago, there was only one young lady who came in, and she was in for providing beverages to underage kids.
Wow.
And she was going to be in for 2 to 5. I think she was almost done. But she really was going to turn her life around. And not she worked at a school, so they had a higher standard for her, so she had to do more time. And I think one of those kids went out in a car and killed somebody.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's the reason she got time for serving them in her house. She thought it was safe, but a couple of them got in a car, and now she's sitting in jail. So you don't even have to be the parent. This was the responsible adult in the household.
Wow.
You know, she was the responsible adult that was there, and it was her house.
Yeah. Hey, if you're just joining us now, Linda, Mark, and I are discussing what our responsibilities are as parents as it relates to our kids in addiction.
Yeah, and you know, I think in cases of abuse where parents are abusing their kids, you see this off-the-charts percentage of them become addicted later on in life.
Is that right?
Yes. Off the charts. And so cases like that, I do blame the parents. I mean, I do blame the parents. But then there's other cases where, you know, parents do their best and there's the genetic predisposition. And, you know, maybe somebody was struggling with alcoholism themselves, right? And the disease of alcoholism. And I guess, lo and behold, you got to blame the disease of alcoholism the most, right?
Well, I don't know how the courts... That'd be nice, but I mean, how many times the three of us, we just got lucky we didn't hurt somebody?
Yeah, it used to really, you know, I drove impaired hundreds of times.
Yeah, sure.
Hundreds of times. Sure. At any one of those times, it could have happened. You know,
we're very fortunate. It didn't happen to us.
Yeah. Salvatore P. from the Bronx writes in, "Yo, what's up? I've been clean from heroin for over 25 years. I enjoy the show. Keep up the good work, guys."
That's nice
That's
to hear.
That's nice.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Let me read another one right now. Melanie S. from Negril, Jamaica.
Oh, Negril.
"We have meetings on the island." This sounds like an ad. "We have meetings on the island and encourage your audience to visit us."
That's nice.
That sounds cool.
You ever been to a meeting outside the country?
Yes.
I have.
Oh, I love Barbados and Paris.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have.
Bridgetown, Barbados was an awesome meeting.
So, I mean, Mark, what do you – so how old is your son? You don't have to give his name or anything.
He's 13 years old.
All right, do you have talks with him? He's at an age now where all this stuff can start to happen.
Yeah, I haven't really had talks. I mean, I've mentioned it in passing that these days all somebody has to do is take one pill and it's laced with fentanyl. I've mentioned it in passing, but I haven't had like really serious conversations with him about it, which I don't know, is that the right thing or the wrong thing? But we're just doing our best to raise him well and to make sure there's no trauma going on and things like that. But it scares me because we got the genetics in our family big time.
Also, he's going to be subjected to all these drugs. You know that.
Yeah. Yeah. He is.
And with your DNA, both of you, just like I had in my family.
Mm-hmm. Scary.
It is scary.
It's scary. And, you know, he hasn't been – one of the things that you look for, too, is, like, risk-taking you know, things like that that you a lot of times do see, you know, with somebody that's up ADHD,
things like that.
I thankfully, knock on wood, I haven't seen those behaviors, which is good. So I'm hoping he has my wife's genetic side. I know you have both.
Look, can I just say, most people don't have kids that are messed up on drugs. Most. Yeah. So hopefully you'll be in that group.
I sure hope so. You know, but it's so scary. You know, and the thing that scares me, and we talk about it a lot. I mean, this isn't the 80s, you know. This isn't the 90s when somebody got hooked on drugs and you rarely ever hear of an overdose. You know, this is a time when it just, you don't even have to be hooked on drugs. You just go out with a friend and make a mistake.
It's a big deal. Linda, we were lucky, weren't we?
We were so lucky. And our family, he grew up knowing all our friends were in the program. He had been sitting outside of meetings since he was little. So he kind of grew up in the program. He still went out there, tried it, and whatever. And it wasn't until after he got clean that I found out how young he started. He started when he was 10. And him and his best friend, they were able to keep it a secret. They were taking it on the bus to go to school. Like, we had clueless. In the program all those years, at that point, I had almost 20 years, and he went out, and I had no idea.
Look,
no
kids
clue.
Generally can fool their parents.
Even
if you're
me.
Not in addiction, you can trick them pretty well.
So it's not so easy. It's not the easiest thing in the world, and then you have to get them help.
And then we like to think, because we're in recovery, they can't pull the wool over our eyes. They can in 1 second.
Right.
They really can, except for our sense of smell.
Well, that's
like I can smell alcohol, and I'm sure our viewers and all can agree. When you're in recovery, you can smell alcohol across the room. You can smell pot like half a block away. You know, I don't think my son could go in there. He's about to do this thing, but I don't think my son could get away with that kind of thing without me knowing.
I agree with you. You know,
you've been dying to do that one. Gary's got these new sound box things that just got updated. And
say something very clever, Mark.
Okay. And they're all the Three Stooges, pretty much.
Do you remember them? Are you too young?
I do remember. I used to watch the Three Stooges.
Did you?
Yes. Yes, it was on black and white TV.
You know, I think some of the violence that they portrayed caused a lot of problems with people like me.
Yes.
Really?
And Linda,
Did you used to do the thing where you hit somebody in their head?
Yeah, I would hit somebody in the head with a hammer.
Who was that, Curly? Or not Curly. What was the guy's name?
There was Mo, Larry, and Curly.
The guy that was bald. Or were they all bald?
That was Curly.
That was Curly.
Yeah. Okay, he would hit people right in the head.
And he
couldn't
would
watch that. I would
time.
Turn the station to Superman when I came home. The Three Stooges would be on at 3, and I would see them as soon as they started the hitting. I would change the set, chasing Superman. I would watch Superman at 3:30.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Listen, if you're listening, you're watching, and you suspect a family member is in trouble, please call this number, 1-888-728-9941. It's a substance abuse and mental health hotline. That was my mistake. That's the number of the station. The mental health hotline is 1-800-662-HELP. But you can also call 1-888-728-9941 and let us know your experiences, either when you were a kid and you were fooling your parents, you thought you were, or if you're a parent and you're suspecting stuff with the kids. Because nowadays, not only are the drugs lethal with one shot or one snort or whatever, but the legal system is very tough now. Real tough.
It is. I guess it was a little tougher, though, back in the 80s and 90s, right?
I remember, you know, if you got caught, let's say, drunk driving, they'd say, get home, drive home, drive home.
They would send you home.
Send
exactly.
You home.
Did that happen to you guys ever? Like, where they just said, drive home?
No, it didn't happen. I never had that. Did you?
And Linda, everything's
Queens,
happened to
me. Everything's happened to me. We don't want to talk to you for a free call. We don't want to go through all that. But yeah, many times they said, just go home. We don't want to talk to you anymore. Just go home.
They would sniff in my car and say, there's no smell of alcohol. There's Quaaludes. Linda, you know that.
No smell.
No smell at all. Sam G. from Palm Springs, California writes, well, this is apropos. What can I do to help my son understand that he is killing himself with drugs? He's 16. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid he'll make a very stupid mistake that will land him in the legal system in California.
Wow. Now, if he's open to counseling, even if you don't framework it as drug and alcohol counseling and just get him to a counselor, that's the best course action right there. You know,
no threats.
Oh, that seems to have the opposite effect on people who are oppositional to begin with.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Threats don't work. So I had a friend, she tested her kid every week and he agreed to it. If I had done that with my son, he would have run away from home. Yeah. So everybody has to know who their kid is.
Yes, that's right.
But counseling is the first step. It's the best thing. Mm-hmm. You may not be able to push him right into treatment. And if he's not in treatment, fentanyl test kits.
Yeah. Mark, do you get juveniles in your facility?
So we don't have adolescents in my facility. Okay. Now, we used to, where I was working, we would get adolescents and things like that. Young. And a lot of them, you know, it was marijuana and alcohol. Then you started seeing some opiates come in the picture with the young. I'm talking 15, 16.
Yeah, sure,
but
sure.
That was pretty rare back then. I haven't been working with adolescents for a while. But now my biggest concern, and I bring it up on here a lot, is the marijuana with like the 15, 16 year olds, 13 year olds, like getting younger and younger because they're watching their parents do it. It's all around the house. And I always think of it as like a gateway. You know, I think of it as like they start doing that and then their friend has a Percocet and that kind of thing. But that's one of my big concerns right now.
Good. If you guys out there are listening to us and want to watch us do the show, go to Facebook. Go to our page on Facebook, Clean and Sober Radio, and you can watch us do the show like these folks. Judge Christopher Maddox is watching. Kathy Wolf Collin, have a great show. Linda Garrity is watching. Ben Bell Sands is watching. Rich Moyer is watching. Kevin Heiler is watching. Amy McGinley is watching. Alex DeSavo is watching. Diana McDonald is watching. Joe Marino is watching. Kevin Gleason is watching. Let's do this. We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll revisit the who's watching us. And seriously, folks, can you honestly say that you think your kids are sober when deep down inside you know they're not? We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
When you look into the mirror, do you see your addiction to drugs or alcohol staring back at you? At Gaudenzia, in that mirror, we see you, healthy and at peace. At Gaudenzia, we see the tools you can use to recover the life you want to live. Hope is in the effective treatment we can offer, designed uniquely for you. Your hope is waiting at Gaudenzia. Call 833-976-4357. 833-976-4357. Through Gaudenzia, you can recover your life. Begin today.
What's happening? Brandon Novak here from Those Movies Jack Zor, author of that addiction memoir, Dream Seller. Do me a favor and tune into Clean and Sober Radio with Gary Hendler.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, we're all back in the studio. Linda E. has joined us today, and we are discussing what responsibilities we have as parents as it pertains to our kids' addiction. And it's a serious subject. I mean, we all want to give our kids whatever they want. You know, we're enablers, basically. But there's certain things we can't give kids because, you know, we hear about parents that give kids drugs. I mean, that goes on.
It does.
I mean, that to me is so stupid, but it goes on.
Yeah, you hear, you know, parents sometimes say that, like, oh, well, it's safer if I start with them and things like that. What do you think of that, Linda?
My parents smoked cigarettes. And so my mother said, don't take a cigarette from anybody else, because I guess she was afraid that I was going to get a joint from somebody. Mm. So she said, if you have a desire to smoke, you should always buy your own, carry your own. Don't take anything from anybody. But I never liked smoking, so it didn't register with me. She was trying to keep me safe.
You know, it's funny.
But they were smoking, but I didn't want to. So it worked out, but yeah.
My uncle tells me the story how he was caught smoking a cigar or something, and he was real young. I mean, he was probably 12 or something. And my grandfather said, hey, you can smoke as much as you want. And he gave him and put him in this small room, and he got sick, and he never – well, actually, he did smoke a pipe eventually.
You know what that reminds me of?
Yeah.
I'd like to start fires in the woods and stuff.
Me too.
So what they did to me was they gave me boxes and boxes of matches at the sink to light them and throw it into the sink.
Really?
To get that arson out of me.
Did you burn anything down?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Did you?
I mean, it was a mistake.
It wasn't a mistake.
We set a park on fire.
You
myself,
did.
Fire department, the whole bit, you know.
It's lucky we didn't grow up together, Mark.
Gary, if we grew up together, I don't even know what would have happened. It would have been really, really bad. That's what I'm thinking. Because we have so much in common. You know, actually, if all three of us grew up
Linda,
together,
right?
I mean, jeez.
We would have had this girl
this
in our club.
This would just put us right over the top here with Linda, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Hello.
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 That's us.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello. All right, getting back to serious topic. This thing with kids is, I can just remember, I was clean when my kids were born, so.
Yeah,
but I know with other things they want something they probably shouldn't have. You get it right, Linda. You
all
get it
the
for
time
them anyway. But these parents that are actually being proactive and giving kids drugs, because marijuana is a drug. I know people don't want to hear that,
but it is.
It is.
Yeah, and it's become very, very
mainstream.
Is okay,
sure.
You know, and all the kids are a lot of the kids are having these vapes and they're bringing them into the high schools and they're high and. And all of this, and it is concerning. Now, again, is that a gateway? You know, are they going to end up going down the opiate road eventually, or are they just going to stay with pot? I guess that's the big question.
Do you ever get people in your business, your clinics, that never used, and they're older people, and because marijuana is legalized, they start smoking dope?
I haven't had that, but believe it or not, I've had people that all of a sudden started doing coke or meth at an older age.
Really?
Yes. I haven't had these reports of, well, it's been legal and I just started smoking marijuana. It seems like most of people that end up with us have smoked it before, but I've had people that have been like alcoholic and the next thing you know, they're like 55 and they decide to try meth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, meth. Or yes, I've had them where all of a sudden, you know, they decided to start heroin. You know, and at an older age, you know. How about you, Linda? Have you had that where they came in and they're like, "Well, I started smoking pot because it's so," but I never smoked it before.
No, not with pot. With pot, it's usually the younger kids, and they're usually in big, big denial about it, that it's not anything, and we shouldn't take it seriously, and even if it's chronic. But I have had heroin addicts who couldn't function on probation or parole unless we got them the marijuana card. So the judges agreed to it. And they let them smoke, and that kept them off the heroin, and they were able to comply, and their parole officer agreed that they could smoke the medicinal stuff. But that's not everybody. That's only certain people that couldn't handle it.
I guess that's a win right there in those cases.
It is. Yeah. Right? Yeah. As long as they can comply with their, as long as they don't go back to jail. That's all I cared about.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Michael S., Bird's Nest, Virginia. You know where that is?
I have no clue.
No idea.
Yeah. Do you guys think that the public is sick and tired of hearing about addiction? Yes.
I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do.
Yeah, Michael, we do.
And, you know, you hear these stories about where they say, oh, this could have killed two cities worth of people. And everybody's become kind of blunted to that, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it doesn't shock you anymore.
There's no shock anymore.
There is no shock anymore. 1-888-728-9941. Give us a call if you're not a chicken.
Yes. And I, you know, if you're feeling suicidal or you're feeling like self-harm, the other hotline is 988. It's really important because right now is one of the highest times of the year, if not the highest, for suicide.
Did you ever call that number seriously to see who answers it?
No.
Because I've called the 1-888-728-9941 and it is a responsible professional person who answers that phone.
Wow, did you just tell them you were trying to?
That was when I was on the board of directors for the state.
Okay.
But I would imagine if you told them you were calling as a clinician, they might believe it or not believe it, but you would see how they handled you.
I've had clients that have called.
They have.
Okay. That have called the mental health hotline and said it worked.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we got so many. I guess because Linda's here, and also, so you know many what people I wanted watching to mention, you know that?
That it's not just the legal system. Go ahead.
Yeah. Rich Moyer's watching. Amy, well, we got Amy McGinley. Let me see if there's a couple more. Judge Duffy, Joel Cooper from Florida. Kevin Gleason has a lot to say.
Yes, he does.
And he does say hello, Linda. pot is legal on the streets in Vegas. It gets really stinky.
Yeah. You smell it all over the place.
They said New York's the same now.
Bob Mueller, Mickey Layton.
I want to give a shout out to Mike Brill. He's in Lima, Peru.
Lima, Peru, baby.
Wow, is he? Yes. Come and call in.
Yes, call us, Mike, if you can. He's in the airport. So,
all right, so the question is, what do you do if your kid, you know, it goes back to what do you do if your kid is using and you know it?
It's so hard. I mean, like we said, trying to get him in with a counselor, right? And then there can be cases where they're really not cooperative. You know that they're not, that they're using, and you start doing things like, hey, I'm not going to pay the phone bill and things like that. I know, Linda, you were saying punishment doesn't work real well, but there are some cases that you start taking away different privileges and things like that. But one of the things is it's very individualized.
Yeah.
It's very individualized. You really have to look at the whole case, and you have to look at what kind of mental health issues might be going on. You know, what kind of underlying mental health issues that might not be treated. You have to look at the family dynamic. So it's a lot of people like they jump at this sort of, there's one way that you got to do it. And for me, in my opinion, there's just so much to it. And it's so individualized. It needs to be.
Where can these parents go to find out how to keep their sanity while their kid is using?
They can go to Al-Anon. They can go to, open AA meetings. They can go to, what's the other one?
Nar-Anon,
yeah. I mean, that's a story. I personally found that Al-Anon was too depressing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't.
Did you?
Yeah.
It was difficult for us because they say things to you like, oh, you're an alcoholic, you're double blessed. And then you kind of feel weird, like you're with the enemy. I had a friend that didn't like it at all. His wife went and he never liked it. But they do have sayings that help. You didn't cause it, you can't cure it, is a big, important thing for parents to know. Even though I passed along the genetics, I didn't cause it. I tried to say, don't ever pick up. And then, you know, so, you know, you didn't cause it. You can't cure it. You're powerless.
Can't control.
Can't control them. Can't control other people.
Look, the meetings, you know, I should have gone to more meetings, Al-Anon, just like AA, because some meetings are good, some meetings aren't good.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got there?
I've got Colleen Kilkenny says, I am not responsible for my son's addiction. I believe it's in the genes. With both parents in a 12-step fellowship, his chances were very high for him to be an alcoholic addict. I have three boys. They all grew up in the 12-step household.
Mm-hmm.
Parents are supposed to protect their children. We had to put him out of our lives. It nearly killed me. But I was only stealing his bottom. He is celebrating 2 years in April.
Congratulations.
That's amazing. It's amazing.
That's a great story.
It really is, you know, and I can't, you know, not going through it. You guys have gone through it. I can't imagine the relief of finally sort of seeing the other side of this.
I can't imagine telling my kid, get out of the house. Right, I don't know if I could.
I couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it. Is that right? Is it wrong? I don't know.
And that's kind of one of those cases where some people say there's this one way you got to throw them out and things like that. And then, you know, sometimes when you throw them out and they go out in the OD.
I mean, exactly,
it's really
You had Larry Arada on here. His kid was sober, came home, took a pill from somebody, and
just like that, he
lost his son, Brandon. I think it's been 3 or 4 years now, and it's so sad. And they can come home from rehab. You think they're doing it. They're going to meetings. And then they see a friend, somebody slips them something, and it was fentanyl, and it's all over, and they're in your house, and it's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking.
Lynn, did you ever think, how did we get so lucky?
We got so lucky.
Mark also.
Our kids are just...
And with ourselves.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. We're blessed.
Right?
We are so lucky.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember just taking stuff and not even caring what was in it, you know? But the fentanyl wasn't around.
I mean, if you're a first-time listener or viewer of this show... The three of us are testimony and proof that no matter how bad your addiction is, you can get better.
Yeah.
For real. I'm
very lucky with lots of help from other people.
Exactly.
Don't you think?
From those who went before us to teach us.
Right?
Yes.
Hey, we do have a caller on the line. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen and Linda.
Hello,
how
are you?
Mike.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike, we know that.
Mike.
Yeah.
Michael, we can read, surprisingly enough.
Okay. Well, you guys can call in, so I figured I haven't even gone through the gate yet. I'm literally in Lima, Peru, coming back from a nine-day adventure.
I think these are our longest distance caller.
It's true.
You just set a record, Mike Brill. You are our longest... longest traveler calling into the show from how many miles?
Here's what Mark is trying to say. You are furthest away from this studio than anybody ever.
Thank you, Gary, called in. Yes,
that's
much simpler the way you put that. Much simpler.
Well, and also, if I might add, to you, I take you all the way wherever I go. So it's kind of like there's no distance.
That's sweet.
There's no distance I can go where I don't take my recovery.
What are you doing now in South America, wherever it is?
Yeah, I am. I just got done 9 days of. I did a 2-day Inca trail hike, and I ended up coming upon the Andes Mountains.
What?
From about 11.
Wow.
About 11,000 feet. 11,000 feet up in the Andes, I came walking down on Machu Picchu, the Inca ruins.
You could never, Michael, you never could have done that stone, could you?
No. You know what? These are the things that I went and got educated and traveling the world because that's what I said every time I sat on the bar stool at 2 a.m. That's what I said. I was talking out of the side of my mouth, 12, 14, 18 beers in and whatever else in me. And I said, I'm going to go get my bachelor's degree in this and this. So, my recovery is just about integrity. I don't care what I said while I was drunk, high or whatever. Like, these days now, 20 years, almost 21 years, I'm doing all the things that I said I was going to do, whether I was drunk or high or not.
You're amazing. Yeah, you're amazing, man. Hey, is this a long-distance phone call?
You know what? When you put a certain plan on your phone, you get automatic international travel. So I just paid another $20, so I was able to text and call people and FaceTime and all these countries in the world, they use that app, WhatsApp. So you're communicating with all the people there. I tell you, I'm coming home with like 25, 30 emails. I walked down into the lobby of my hotel. I was in Cusco, which is a city in Peru, which is at probably about 11,000 feet. I got off the plane. I couldn't even walk off. I got hit with it, the altitude.
Oh, really?
But I walked down.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sickness?
It took at least 36 hours to adjust. And then I started my hiking.
That altitude, it affects breathing or what?
Yeah, yeah. Well, breathing, headaches. It can also. I had headaches, breathing and headaches. But it seems I kind of like just rested. The more I rested throughout it, the symptoms subsided or not. And I tell you, I didn't have it bad. I kind of had a bad headache for a while. But I noticed that was when I was walking around the city or kind of doing some more active stuff. So.
Hey, Mike, did you ever say to yourself, as you're enjoying your life now incredibly well, wow, I could never have done this if I didn't get sober?
Absolutely. I mean, I look at my life in halves, before sobriety and after sobriety. And, you know, it comes down to just simple logic. Simple logic, my life is better. But I'm also going to say to you, it's also everything that I've done, from degrees to traveling to relationships to everything, I've earned. So it wasn't this wave of the wand or it wasn't pixie dust. I went out and earned everything that's beautiful in my life, I earned. But I also, at the finality of earning something, there is no way I look at that and say it was just me. I mean, it's an absolute me program. I had family, friends, cousins, teachers, coaches, whatever it took. So the selfishness of my disease, I relinquished when I say, when I accomplish something and I look at it as a we thing, as an accomplishment that only we could do, meaning whoever is involved in my life, who's ever encouraging me, who's ever loving me. You know, the recovery people loved me before I could love myself. And that was the greatest asset.
There's certainly a lot of pieces to the puzzle of getting in recovery, aren't there? There's so many variables.
There is. And you have an amazing topic going on right now, Gary, you know, and children, you know, I'm very hesitant to be absolute in my opinion, because I just think when it comes to human experience, and Mark had mentioned family dynamics, you know, I'm going to be honest, I have never seen the confirmation of genetic addictions. It's absolutely being confirmed that it's genetic. I think it's more of an external higher risk factors, the family dynamic, the education, possibly the socialization, the mental health and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, when we're talking about children, you know, if we look at the spectrum of, do we expose them or do we become militant and say, absolutely no, you know? So I think that's the spectrum, you know, the North Pole being, No. And you're militant and you're absolutely hovering over the child. Or on the other side, it's kind of like, let's expose them and let's teach them how to use responsibly, which is over in Ireland was a very, very popular activity, is to bring the children. Or even in Italy, if you think about international life, Italy had children drinking wine at the dinner table. There's all these different spectrums of experience.
But can you use fentanyl responsibly?
No. Nobody gets into the ring with an opioid and wins.
Yeah, I think that concept is, when you said it, I sort of like flinched a little bit, you know? But who knows? You know that? Who knows?
Well, you know, I think we can agree that, you know, alcohol and marijuana are the kind of like the beginning of some, I mean, anybody who has an addiction, that was the beginning. I would think. Other than, I mean, now there's, and here I go, Gary and Mark, I'm already stuttering over, there's so many human experiences out there, and there's so many to be evaluating it, so that I don't want to be absolute in any of my opinions.
Right.
But it's a beautiful thing to develop. Here's what I'm going to say. We have all these prevention activities out there. We have all these prevention, money, millions of money prevention. And what I think we should do is educate children on the post. Meaning, if you become an addict and an alcoholic, it's okay. How about we try to save lives so they don't go spitting into the stigma and discrimination? How about we start educating kids at 7th, 8th, 9th grade and saying, listen, let's bring it, there's a world out there that you can live, but if you become a pickle, you can't go back to being a cucumber.
I hear
you. You know, and you don't want to expose them to the reality of recovery that, you know, if something happens and you're drinking and you're using, all of a sudden you start making that, you can expose them and educate them before for prevention. But I think there should be more. I think there should be more education in raising your awareness and raising the children's awareness to a life of recovery.
Michael, all great points. We got to run to a commercial right now, but listen, have a safe trip back. You're so wise. You have a lot of wisdom, my friend.
It's one of the most interesting.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
One of the most interesting people I know.
Yeah. I'll be home in 24 hours.
All right.
I just got off my
safe travels, brother.
Thanks, Mike.
God bless you all, and thank you, everyone.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
Bye-bye.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
When you look into the mirror, is your addiction staring back at you? Too many times, that answer is yes. At Gaudenzia, we see you differently. We see you as a whole person, healthy and at peace, living beyond the stranglehold of drugs or alcohol. At Gaudenzia, we see a pathway with tools you can use to lead you to recovering the life you want to live, recovering the life you want to share with the family who loves you. At Gaudenzia, we see hope and believe with the effective treatment we can offer, designed uniquely for you, within reach of where you are standing, you'll look into the mirror and see the potential for the fulfilling life that is in you. This time, you'll find your hope at Gaudenzia. It's spelled Gaudenzia. Call 833-976-4357. Again, it's 833-976-4357. Begin to recover your life through treatment at Gaudenzia today. Begin today.
Hi, I'm Billy J. Kramer, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, we're back. Thanks for joining us. Clean and Sober Radio, broadcasting out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So today's show was... part of it was what responsibility do we have as parents as far as our children getting addicted. I just have to mention some more people that are watching us. Dennis Helverson is watching. Todd Klotz is watching. William Schiffman, one of the greatest fishermen, Mark.
Really?
Oh, on the East Coast. You got to get to know him. Unbelievable. Let me see. C. Ruger.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Ted Klotz brings up a great point. Maybe introduce the idea where your life will most likely go if you become an addict or alcoholic, not just drugs are bad.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. They had a program in the 70s and early 80s called Scared Straight. It's out of a New York penitentiary. They brought young kids in there. Yeah. And I'm trying to, at the prison I'm on the board in Montgomery County, which is outside of Philadelphia, have the same kind of program, bring some of these kids in there. And, you know, it's not going to help everybody because nobody believes they're going to get caught, but it might help somebody when they see where you can end up. Even if you come from a nice family, all that blah, 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 you can still end up jammed up pretty well.
You know, when it comes to adolescence and it comes to drug and alcohol treatment and things like that, you have to be very careful because there's actually been some studies that have said that it can be counterproductive, you know, to have drug, alcohol. You know, young adolescents in drug and alcohol treatment, you know?
Oh, okay.
Because I guess they get together and they, you know, they're talking about certain drugs that maybe they want to try early and, you know, things like that. So it's so tricky. But I do agree with what you're saying, bringing people in, you know, that
You might reach somebody.
Yes, but it's tough. It's really tough with adolescents. You have to be extremely careful.
Sure, and don't you think, guys, that – nobody thinks they're going to get caught doing anything, or they wouldn't do it, right?
Yeah.
You never think, I'm going to get caught. So the mind of an adolescent is not developed,
yep.
And they can't process what could happen to them. I mean, you know better than I would. Linda would know better than I would. These kids, can you imagine at that age somebody saying to you, hey, if you do this, you're going to go to jail?
I would not You know, I always thought, well, the worst that can happen is juvie hall.
Right.
But, well, that's not good either.
I know. I'm so stupid, you know.
Georgina, I'll save you right now.
You saved me. Yeah,
Georgina W. from Cape May, New Jersey.
Yeah.
You know where it is.
You know where it is.
I find it very difficult to stop drinking. I don't even know why I need to stop. I have a good job, loving family, and just feel that even though I still have everything and everyone around me, my everyday consumption is not good.
Get your liver enzymes checked.
You always say that, don't you?
Huge. I've had some people where everything seems okay, and then they go and their liver is an absolute mess. You know, and, you know, the internal organs, and it will catch up with you health-wise eventually. You know, something will go. So and sometimes it's the most dangerous thing when there's somebody's drinking so heavily and there's not these external consequences because, you know, they end up blowing out their liver.
Yeah. Linda, do you think this? I do. Maybe you don't. All the pills that we put in our body, thousands and thousands of them, are we paying the price a little bit right now?
Absolutely. I think we're paying the price with our health. I absolutely do. Yeah. I think that we don't have the same systems as other people. We can't recover as fast from illnesses because our body is thinking we still have those old things. Oh, you hurt? Take this. You hurt? Take this. And you have to undo that. You have to get used to feeling pain. You have to get used to feeling feelings, to feeling uncomfortable and sitting with it. It's hard. It's hard to sit with pain, and I do think that we're falling apart from all the things we did. But who knows? Maybe we just had bad genes all the way around.
All the way.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's just bad genes.
Well, you know, Mike brought up a good point, and I've always been wondering. It's like, why are some of these societies where they have this low, low alcoholism rate?
Yeah.
And they do things like their kids get introduced to alcohol early. I mean, it's always – seems like none of this stuff works in the United States, though. I don't know what it is.
You're so right. It seems like everything in this country is blanked up.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, and nothing works like it works around the world. And we are susceptible to all sorts of horrible things, and we enjoy them. And it's just like the whole society is like in its adolescence.
It really is.
You know?
Instant gratification. People over there in Europe do not take as many pills as we take. They don't look for a pill to be a cure. You know, they lay down for 2 days if they have a cold. Like, they don't do what we do. They have patience. It's a whole different lifestyle in Europe. Whole different lifestyle.
Whole different psyche, I guess.
Yeah, they're just chill. And we're not.
I mean, and then you hear of like, you know, safe injection sites or things like that where it goes absolutely disaster in the United States. But then some of these places,
Amsterdam,
it works
Canada.
Super
yeah,
well.
Amsterdam, Canada.
You know, I mean, it just has me scratching my head.
Well, not to be political, but I think we were brought up thinking this is the greatest country of all. Yeah. I'm not so sure.
Me neither. I mean.
And everybody wants to have fun. It's like how we were in our addiction. But the whole country just wants to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe genetically, the adventurers were more likely to come over to the United States. And maybe that gene is associated with more addiction.
That's a good idea.
There you go, Mark.
You know, I mean, there's so many different ways you could look at that, you know?
Brad, he should get the Pulitzer Prize.
I think
you know that?
You're
that.
Right.
There is a book in that.
Absolutely.
Yes. But, you know, because you get more people that are very excitement or adventure or take risks coming over to the United States. And that same gene, you risk takers with addiction, risk takers with, you know?
Yeah.
So we'll see.
You know, I never heard anybody say that. That's a good point.
Yeah. That's something like, you know, it definitely is a possibility, you know, when you look at the whole psyche and you look at where our genetics came from.
Good point.
But I think it's a lot more than that. I mean, I just think it's a lot more of some of the religious stuff, some of the guilt and shame, you know, instant gratification. It's this big mix, but it's so frustrating because you're right. It seems like these other societies can get things under control and we can't.
I think this country, one word, is silly.
Silly?
The whole country is silly.
I mean, I guess you could say that, right?
Well, I just
tragic.
Did.
Tragic?
Tragic.
Yeah, tragic.
Hey, it was a good show today. I hope somebody got something out of it. Great caller from Peru.
Yeah, our longest caller.
Longest caller. Are we missing anybody on here? We got Mike Brew, Laura Story, Sarah Wale.
Oh, yeah. Hello, Sarah. She's on a vacation right now.
How do you know that?
I actually, she's a very respected, awesome colleague of mine. She's
oh, that's
awesome.
Great.
Yes.
That's great.
And she's away.
Well, welcome to the show.
Welcome, Sarah.
Laura Story says, good afternoon, guys and gal. So sorry I'm late, but I'm here.
You made it.
That's all
that matters. She's here a lot.
That's all that matters. Okay.
She's here a lot.
Linda, thanks for stopping by again.
Anytime.
Mark, thank you so much. Brad, Tyler, great job today. Remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Hendler.
I'm Mark Sigmund.
Thank you for joining us, and thank you for all the support that you give us year after year after year.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
Tries to bring you